Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Macho at Midnight. And now here is your host, Macho Sasquatch. Hey, Gary Day. Apologize for a little bit of silliness there. It's just what I was feeling in the moment. Welcome to the show. Thanks for listening. I want to start with a little bit of a depressing note. I guess, I think there are degrees to depression, aren't there? There's some things that are just a little bit depressing and some things that are a lot depressing. Maybe the things that are a little bit depressing, some people would just say were sad. I don't know. This just depends on how you interpret it. But what I wanted to talk about was I looked at the ratings today. They're not good. But they're not good for anybody, really. Blog Talk, we're down. People, I guess, doing other things. I don't know. I'll speak for myself. I'm not planning on really changing anything. You know, it would bore me to cater to an audience. I enjoy being able to just do my thing. And, you know, if there aren't all that many people interested in my, I will rephrase that immediately. If there aren't that many people interested in me doing my thing on the air, then that's almost as bad. But anyway, I think it's just keep doing what I do, and if people are going to come back, they're going to come back. You know, I'm not thinking of doing Lost in Space and changing the whole show in the second year and all that. So don't worry, you single-digit audience, you. The Mudtoe Sasquatch show will stay just as it is. Unless Chief Iggy tells me to change it. I mean, that's his prerogative. Anyway, I mean, I don't think this is secret information, but, you know, nobody's over 100 a week right now. Used to be all of us were consistently over 100 a week, and now nobody is, not even Adriana and her Sexy Lion's Lair show. Just 88. So, maybe it's a summertime thing. Maybe it's people just not feeling very spiritual at the moment. I don't know. But one must have faith and continue to practice one's own modality and believe that people will wander back this way. Okay, no more about that. I have a bone to pick very quickly, and then we'll move on to more interesting things. I used to have frequent arguments with my ex-son-in-law, while he was my son-in-law, about the nature of consumer technology and how whether it was meant to serve the needs of the people designed or the people who used it. And I've used personal computers, you know, since I started in the world of work back in the 80s, the early 80s. And they used to have this thing called backwards compatibility, which was when a new operating system came out. You went from DOS 3 to DOS 4, let's say. All of your old applications, all of the old things that you, any files that you wrote for the version 3 versions of your software, it was Multiplan, Lotus 1-2-3, whatever it was. Anything you wrote on that ran on version 3 of DOS would run on version 4 of DOS. And it was just not a question. It just happened that way. Now, not so much. I think it happened when they went to when the transition to Windows 95 took place. And Windows started working a lot differently than it had before. All of a sudden, you found you had to go to a special place in the program to run your DOS. And as the operating systems advanced, that special place got more and more limited, and finally, good luck trying to find a place to run DOS programs now. So I'd always moaned that was an indication that consumer electronics software for consumer electronics was designed for the convenience of the engineers and not for the convenience that you can fairly call it consumer electronics, because it didn't serve the needs of the consumer. It served the needs of the people who designed it and the people who owned it. And now I'm finding something very similar, and I don't have my ex-son-in-law here to argue with, so I'm going to tell you guys about it. I bought a little keyboard, a little musical keyboard, tiny little piano-looking thing to help me out with my music lessons. And I bought it at the music store where I'm taking the music lessons, and they advised me to get the latest software, which I haven't done, because I need to have my computer and the keyboard and the cord that connects them together, and I have to be in a place where they have Wi-Fi. And so far, all of those things haven't happened yet at the same time. So I tried to use it today because, maybe I can install it and get something out of it. Well, it installed, and the little menu says, it's installed and it's okay, it's ready to go, but it doesn't make any noise. Now, I know, and again, I already told you about the software, and I also should tell you that the music store has disclaimed all responsibility for making this thing that they sold me work. Now, I think that's garbage, but at least they told me. And they did tell me up front, look, we're not even going to help you if you take this thing home and it doesn't work. So, and I haven't tried to put the update software on it yet either, so that also could potentially be the problem. But I'm thinking what's wrong is, because I've had the same issue before when I've tried to install something new, and it's telling me, the computer's telling me everything's okay. Somewhere deep in the bowels of Windows 8 is a box that needs to be checked, or one that's checked that needs to not be checked. And that's the whole problem. I've had that 3 or 4 times with this machine and then with another machine that was Windows 7. But the whole thing has gotten just so convoluted and so focused on the engineering that, for me, if it's going to be consumer electronics, if you're going to call it consumer electronics, I should take that keyboard out of the box, plug it in, and it works. No matter they could publish limits on what software it'll work with. If it's supposed to work with that software, I should plug it into the computer and it should work. I should not have to do all these flip-flops. And my son-in-law would say, well, that would slow down the development of the technology. What's important is that the technology go forward. I maintain that what's important is, if it's consumer technology, is that it meets the needs of the consumer and the desires of the consumer. And the United States was founded on those principles of capitalism and da-da-da-da, all that. But I happen to agree that, with other industries such as the automobile industry, the automobile industry, at least in the early days, responded very quickly to the desires of the consumers, or at least what they perceived. Sometimes they were wrong about what that was, but it was always in the forefront of design considerations. How are we going to sell this? What do people want from us? And I think in consumer electronics, that's been largely left behind because, especially with Microsoft, they have just a huge built-in market for everything they sell, that it really doesn't have to work properly. So, okay, off my soapbox. That's my bone to pick for this evening. This way, I just have regular departments on this show, because that's kind of the way it's developing. You have the Shaman Tarot and what was the other one? It's been so long, I've forgotten the book, the devotional book, Don't Walk in Dry Places. I should just categorize all these things before I go in the air, but that would be too much like preparation, and I don't prepare. So, I don't know, maybe that could happen, maybe it couldn't. But in any case, I want to make sure, I'm kind of rushing today because I want to make sure I get this next thing done. I did something similar last week, and I almost ran out of time. I didn't realize it was going to take so long, so let me get started on this little thing. I told you last week I left my Shaman Tarot cards back at my parents' house, so I don't have them for the next 2 weeks. Last week, I took a book by a friend of mine, Two Crows, Rutland, David Two Crows Rutland, and using my bus schedules, I selected a random passage from the book as our reading for the night. And I think I also put out a question out there about, what was the question? It was about, I think it was about my writing and my efforts to gain full employment. And the reading kind of suggested that I get off my butt and just get started. So, hey, and I did write something. I probably did put something on my blog this week. So if you check mudtoesasquatch.com, there is fresh material on there for you to read as of Tuesday. I put it on either Tuesday or Wednesday. Anyway, I thought I might do something similar today, but with a different book, just to make it weirder then. I mean, obviously, it's kind of obvious. I picked Tucro's books because it was a spiritual book. Spiritual things, spiritual reading, da 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 da. That's all very obvious. So I was thinking for this week, what if I did it with a non-spiritual book? So I've still got my bus schedules here, and the book I'm going to use is The Smartest Guys in the Room, The Amazing Rise and Scandalous Fall of Enron. And if you remember, Enron is a big power electricity company that's put California into darkness for a while back in the early 2000s, and then they were caught doing all kinds of accounting shenanigans, and the company went bankrupt. And this is a book about how all that happened. And Bethany McLean is one of the authors, and I was quite infatuated with her for quite some time, because there's a movie of this book, a documentary based on this book, and she appears in it and is rattling off all these facts and figures about it, and I'm like, wow, that's the kind of woman I'd love to meet. But I did some research on her, and I found out that she's respected in the field, but not sort of universally revered isn't the right word. The way she got started on this, the story, the Enron, she got started writing it for a magazine, and then it turned into the book. And the way she got started on the story was a short seller told her that there were problems with, that he thought there were problems with Enron. And a short seller is someone who makes money when stocks are going down. And the accusations that's been leveled at Bethany McLean is that she's too eager to do the short seller's bidding. So it becomes a form of self-fulfilling prophecy. They say this company's stock is going to go down. She reports it in her magazine, and the stock, company's stock goes down, not because it was going to go down, but because they read it in the magazine. Someone read it in the magazine. So I just thought that this sort of subterfuge fascinates me, and she's someone I would really love to meet, but she's married, unfortunately. Anyway, this is the book I'm going to use, Smartest Guys in the Room, and I'm going to use the selection of the passage is going to be the same as it was last week. I'm going to pull one of the bus schedules at random. I am doing that right now. And I have pulled number 10. Look, Westboro, this is the one that passes right in front of my front door. And I'm going to open it to the first page with the schedule that has some schedules on it. Last week I made the mistake of just opening it to the first page and there weren't any schedules on it. And boy, was I embarrassed. So, okay, I have that done now. Now I'm going to plunk my finger down in a random place. And then that time that I have my finger on, the minutes are going to represent the page of the book I'm going to read from, and the hour is going to represent the paragraph, that full paragraph. Like if it's three, I would read the third full paragraph. Okay? And if it's too many, like if it gets like into a 10, 11, or 12, I would just let it flow onto the next page. So, ready to go. Here we go. The finger has been plunked. The time is... can't read it, 249. So we're going to go to page 49, the second full paragraph. Help me remember that. It's 49, second full paragraph. Here we go. I haven't got my new glasses yet, that's why it's a little bit difficult for me to read that. Okay, here we go. This is it. You know, I didn't say the question, though. Let me do that before I... And I had this in mind before I started, so it's not like I'm making it up to fit the paragraph. And I haven't read the paragraph yet either. I have my finger on it. Okay, I was thinking about the past couple days on Facebook, and I hadn't been reading Facebook for a while. It's sort of crept back in again. There's a number of different issues regarding sort of social, competing social issues is what I call it. And in other words, there'll be a picture of Cecil the lion who got shot, And they'll say, you know, you're worried about Cecil the lion, but you're not worried about the black teenagers who got shot. You've all probably seen these. It's where there's someone from one social activist group saying, our cause is more important than this cause, then you're all worried about you dumb idiots. That's kind of how it goes. I'm having some difficulty framing a question around that. I mean, I'm pretty sure it's bad. I don't want to ask whether it's good or it's bad. I guess I was just some insight into what that phenomena means to us as spiritual people trying to find our way through all this mess. Okay, so with that in mind, we're going to look at page 49 of The Smartest Guys in the Room, The second full paragraph, it begins, "The gas supply deal fell into place first, struck with the big oil companies that were drilling in the North Sea, which also agreed to build the pipeline. Finalizing agreements to sell Teesside's power proved a tougher sell. ICI would buy the stream and a little of the electricity, but well into 1990, most of Teesside's electrical capacity remained unsold. Frustrated at the lack of progress, the company supplying the gas set a deadline. If Enron didn't finalize the electricity sale by then, they would pull the gas contract, which would finish off Teesside before it even got off the ground. Wing and his team met the deadline by exactly 4 minutes, completing a big signing ceremony at 11:56 p.m. on September 10th, with Teesside's new customers. Four regional electrical companies also became 50% partners in the plant. Press release, Lay seemed almost palpably relieved that Enron had brought Teesside to contractual reality. The first crisis had passed." Well, that's a lot of history right there. And a lot of dry history. And not a lot to read between the lines there, is it? And that's unfortunate because I've budgeted the rest of the show for this. The very last line, "the first crisis had passed." What sort of crisis was it? They're trying to sell this power plant. I think the background of this is Enron had gone to England and tried to build a power plant that basically nobody wanted. Frustrated at the lack of progress, the company supplying the gas set a deadline. Enron didn't finalize the electricity sale by then. They would pull the gas contract, which would finish off Teesside before it even got off the ground. So there's conflict, and we talked about conflict in our little problem statement there. I don't know if I'm pulling a lot of insight from this at all. Maybe the insight we should pull is that we need to stick with spiritual books when we're doing this reading experiment. I really enjoy this book. I got it. It's the first thing I ever bought on the internet. And let's see, it took a while to get to me. It was sort of an experiment because it came through like a company in Canada and hit a couple of the stops. And it gave me the confidence to start buying my school books, my books that I needed for my university classes off the internet, including one that I needed. And the professor was honest with us. She said, "I don't know if all of you are going to be able to find these." But it was a children's book from South Africa, and I managed to find it online. It came to me about 2 weeks before the class was over, and it had hit. I wish I'd saved that envelope. I had it for a while, but it was stamped from all the different places it had visited, and it had come through. I believe it was 7 different stops before it got to me, and most of them were in Europe. Before it got to me in my large city here in the Midwest. But this book here, The Smartest Guys in the Room, came to me before that. And I guess it appeals in many ways to my sense of justice that at least some people, not all people who were involved in this, but at least some people got what they deserved because they were trying to cheat. They were trying to game the system. And in this case, again, in some cases, not in all cases, the system worked. The system weeded out the people who were doing the cheating and put them in their proper place. So the story of how that happened over these, 400 and some pages really captivated me. I used to actually read this book while I was on a treadmill, which is not easy to do. Not easy at all to read on a treadmill. But somehow I managed to do it. It's about the only time I was very busy at that time. It was when I was teaching and going to university and directing plays. And about the only time I had to do recreational reading was while I was exercising. And I used to exercise fairly frequently. That got out of the habit after I hurt my back lifting weights. And I had to stop for a while, and I just never got back into it. About all I do is that all I do now is walking. The gas supply deal fell into place first, struck with the big oil companies that were drilling in the North Sea, which also agreed to build the pipeline. I think they're describing for us sort of an entangling set of alliances. So that Enron makes the deal first with the drillers, finalizing agreements to sell Teesside's power proved a tougher sell. ICI, so this is the third outfit, would buy the steam and a little of the electricity. Well into 1990, most of Teesside's electrical capacity remained unsold. So nobody's buying. Frustrated at the lack of progress, the companies supplying the gas set a deadline. If Enron didn't finalize the electricity sale by then, they would pull the Gazprom contract, which would finish off Teesside. Boy, this is going to finish off whatever listeners I have left. This is just going to knock them right out. Oh, Mudtoe, no one to quit, no one to quit. What are you trying to do here? Trying to pull some sort of nugget of sense. I think sometimes the result of the reading is that you don't have any result. Maybe it wasn't a good question. That could be. Maybe I should have mentioned what the question was before I got the before I took the number. Maybe that's the problem. I've never had this experience in anywhere. I've been sitting with a medium or someone who was reading for me, and then have them just come up with nothing. So I don't know. I'll have to ask Iggy about that. What do you do when you're looking and you just don't have anything? What does that mean, if anything? I sure do want my cards back now, and I'm going to have them back next week. So do come back, please. There will be actual Shaman Tarot cards and an actual Shaman Tarot reading, so you can look forward to that. Should I ask it the same question, or should I try something different? Because I'm really, the question really, I think I need to give it more thought. There's something in there. There's something about this. I look at that thing, and it's obviously very passionate person dumping on other obviously passionate people who happen to be passionate about something else. And there has to be something in that. There has to be a lesson for us in there somewhere, I mean, other than don't do that. Doesn't there? Am I reading too much into this? What do you think? Shall I tell you what I really wrote in my blog? Because I wrote it because I've been trying to think of things to write in my blog. I've actually been sitting in front of the blog and nothing was coming. And there was this sort of, this. It wasn't even really a story, it was just this sort of situation. I've been watching an old movie, THX 1138, directed by George Lucas. And it's everybody in this society has their head shaved. And this just scenario formed in my head about what if one of the actors had decided they didn't want to shave their head and went through all this rigmarole about shaving it. And that story just got stuck in my head and I couldn't sleep. And I was walking around the next day and it was in my head. And I thought, well, I happened to be at a computer. I was at this place, this employment council I've been going to, and they have free computers there for us to use. And so I got on my, it was in my head. I said, okay, this obviously wants to get out. So I dialed up my blog and I typed the story in just sort of spew draft style. I had a professor in graduate school who used to call it a spew draft, where you just type everything that was in your head. You didn't worry about, you know, being nice or you'd be in logical order or anything like that. You just typed everything that was there. So that's what I did. And it ended up being about 1,500 words, which was long for one of my blog entries. But I just, that's where it wanted to be. That's what it wanted to be. I said, fine, I just left it. I had a couple likes. I haven't had any comments about it as a story. I don't know if it's something that's something that I would want to work on some more for the book. But, man, it sure did get stuck in my brain for a while. And I found the way to get it unstuck. Was to get in. That's, that used to happen to me all the time. I needed to happen more. That's how that book is finally going to start moving forward, is where the story has to get into my frontal lobe and just will not quit until I write it down. Otherwise, it's just going to keep rattling around in my brain, entertaining me for the audience of one until the story decides it has to get out. So that's what I'm waiting for. And it's, maybe I don't need to wait for that. Maybe I need to find other ways, as our reading last week, which went much better than the reading this week did, inspired me entreated me, perhaps. That's a good word. You don't get to use it very often. Entreated me to do last week. Let me talk. We got a few minutes left. Let me talk about the movie I went to see tonight. The summer movie series is drawing to a close. I think there's 1 week left. I don't think the remaining movies are ones that I wanted to see. Actually, they're showing what's that old Pearl Harbor movie? Where Burt Lancaster, they're on the beach and the water washes up on them, and then the flames shoot everything up, and Montgomery Clift is in it. From Here to Eternity is showing. I like From Here to Eternity, but it's kind of long. It's kind of long to sit through in one sitting, I think. And the movie actually kind of surprised me. Tonight's movie was kind of long, too, because it was a light romantic comedy from the late 40s. Usually those clock in under 90 minutes, but this one's close to 2 hours, and it's Cary Grant and The Bishop's Wife, which I've never heard of. But Cary Grant plays an angel, and he comes down because of this priest. Actually, I don't know if he's a priest. They left that kind of ambiguous, whether he was a Catholic priest or what his... Well, no, he couldn't have been a Catholic priest because he was married. Boy, that one took a long time to rest on you there, Mudto. But anyway, he was a holy man of some ilk, and he was trying to build this big cathedral. They couldn't raise the money, so he said a prayer for guidance, and Cary Grant came down to help him out. And basically what he did was he solved everybody else's problems except for the preachers. But then through that, the preacher learned that the cathedral really wasn't the important thing. It was the needs of the people around him. It was kind of a cute movie, cheesy in some places. A very long ice skating sequence, which seemed a bit out of place, but they must have had a contract with some ice skaters. Cause obviously, it wasn't Cary Grant and the other actors. Deborah Kerr was the other one, or she in From Here to Eternity. I can't remember. But anyway, the three, they all went out there on the ice, and he starts doing his, of course, he does everything terrific because he's an angel. And they start skating around on the ice together, and it's not them, it's somebody else doing the skating, but that's fine. That's kind of the sort of charm that the old movies have. It's not, you know, they didn't digitally replace people's faces, you know, to make it look like they were the ones doing the skating. They had other people doing the skating, and they either just photographed them from a long way away, or they photographed them in shadow, so you couldn't tell it wasn't the main actors. It's just something that you used to do back in the day, because, you know, they didn't have computers back then, as they say. It was a fun film, and I'm glad I saw it, and I'm very glad for the summer movie series, and glad I was able to support them better this year. I went to a total of 13. No, I went to 11. Yeah, I went to 11, and then two of my tickets I gave to other people. So I went to 11 different movies this year. So I'm proud of that, because last year I think I missed everything. And I want to support that and support the showing of the old movies, you know, wherever I can find it. So we've managed to slog our way to the end of this another half an hour. And I hope you will join me next week for Mudto at Midnight, when I'm going to have a reading that works much better, I promise. Okay. Thanks for tuning in. Have a good evening.